You're listening to the USCA official podcast, which takes you behind the scenes of eventing, covering all the big events, professional tips and tricks, interviews, special guests, and the latest USCA eventing news. Welcome to the USCA official podcast, episode 272 for you listeners. We are creeping closer to that big 300 mark. It will be here before we know it. And on today's show, I have got two very special guests because we are building up to the USCA virtual convention in 2020. And I will start by saying hello, Rob Burke. Rob, how is everything with you?
Doing very well. You know, you always make me feel very important when you very special when I come on. So thank you, Nicole. You're special.
My pleasure. Thank you. Also joining us, Dan Byrne from Echo Ratings. Dan, we have got a lot to look forward to.
We do. I think we've had some time to prepare across 2020 for virtual delivery of all of these things. And I think it's a time, Nicole, that we're going to concentrate on all of the things that technology allows us to do rather than things which I suppose the coronavirus doesn't allow us to do. It's a pity not to be there in person. It's such an important part of the year. But we do have something very special, which is good to be able to take place virtually. So I'm excited.
We do. And it might be that more people can get involved because obviously there is no travel involved. You can do it from the comfort of your own home. You can tune in and out to the different bits that interest you. It should have been in Albuquerque, New Mexico. I have said that right, haven't I, Rob?
Perfectly. Well done.
Brilliant. I seem to remember the first show I ever did on the USCA podcast. I got it horribly wrong. So I've been practicing. Rob, first of all, for anybody who isn't aware, just break down what the USCA convention is and what is in store.
Yeah, and in most years, it's pretty much the biggest party of the year for eventers. And we all get together in North America, we all get together and we work, but we also have a lot of fun. And so I think kind of what Dee was saying, that we have an opportunity here to let a larger audience, and what you were saying as well, experience the convention. So we've made it free this year so people can get a flavor for it. And, it's not only do we have business meetings throughout the week to have internal discussions on where we go forward for the year, but we also have all these really excellent open educational talks as well as policy setting discussions such as the rules open forum. And a lot of other things that our members get directly involved with. So I think it really is an opportunity for us to make more people kind of feel how they have an impact on this organization and the sport as a whole.
Yeah. I think, Rob, just for people that haven't attended, and I suppose in line with the fact that this year we're going to have the opportunity to open it up to more people, what really struck me, myself and Sam have been going over for maybe four years now, I think, to the convention. And it is just such an incredible event. So firstly, the first thing people need to know, and again, maybe the US listeners, mainly US listeners, everybody will know just the size of hotels in America compared to what we're used to in Europe, in the UK. Which are, they're much smaller. Like in America, everything is just so big. So basically, you go into these hotels, and they're massive. And then you look around, and they're full of eventers. It's like an event, except there's no horses, and it's in a hotel. And what's amazing about the convention is that you get so much work done and have such a good time. And actually, I haven't... at Echo Ratings, we get to work with so many different federations, but I've never seen something which is so efficient, so transparent, and just works so well as the convention. So firstly, you get everybody can go and attend as a member. There's so many different talks. There's so many ways in which you can raise your hand and give your advice, give your feedback. And that then gets taken, a lot of that conversation gets taken into subcommittees, which then put forward, there'll be another discussion at that level, and that will then get put forward to, usually I think, Rob, the Board of Governors on the Sunday.
Yeah, exactly. And this year it'll be Tuesday following the convention. But yeah, you're dead on. Good job.
From an efficiency point of view, you see it a little bit at the FEI where they've got the General Assembly, and a lot of decisions get made at that point. But at the General Assembly, you know, dealing with a global governing body, a lot of that stuff will have to be sent out to federations months and months in advance. And then that goes all the way through to, I suppose, September, October, November, when we see the General Assembly happening. What happens here at the convention, what makes it so special, is all of those conversations are going on, but then it happens on a Thursday. You get to talk about safety, you get to talk about performance, you get to talk about membership, you get to talk about grassroots, you get to talk about the Olympics. Everything's happening in different rooms. And then it'll happen again on the Friday, various versions of that. On Saturday, it will happen again. And then suddenly Sunday decisions are made. And from an efficiency point of view, that is incredible. And what makes it even more incredible is that in between every meeting, every night, there is, you know, social occasions, everybody's coming together. And of course, as we know, just so much decision-making and progress happens when you're able to get that many people who all have such a shared passion together, not just in a formal sense, so like around the table making kind of committee and board of governor decisions, but also because they're able to just go down to the lobby and have a drink and talk about it as well and bring in all of the other opinions in a very light way, as well as in a very serious way. So from an outsider looking in, it is such a special thing that the USEA have and that the members have access to. And that's what makes it such a big loss, but also what makes it such a big opportunity for us to be able to shine a light on how it all works this year to everybody. And I suppose, Rob, it's a big responsibility to try and ensure that going into, you know, a really important year for USEA in 2021, from top to bottom of the organization, having come out of a difficult 2020, that we can still get those same quality of decision making and transparency, that we can still do that in a virtual sense.
Yeah, no, it's a really good point, Dee. And you know, along in through this whole process too of the convention, one of the coolest things for me as just a fanboy of the sport is I'll be sitting in a room next to a gold medalist who's like, who I can whisper into their ear and say, hey, you know, what do you think of this? And there's that access, right? So not only are you sitting there with top athletes, the team coach, the leaders of the USCF, our federation, leaders of the association, and you have like immediate instant access to them. It's pretty unique among sports on the whole. And I don't anticipate this virtual meeting it being any different. You know, you'll be sitting there in a meeting with the same people who are signed on. And, you know, all in all, like you said, I think we're pretty lucky to have this opportunity as members and as eventers.
The word that always sticks with me is transparency as well, because, and it's part of what this podcast is about, and it's being able to talk to the members directly and for the members directly to have their say. This is an opportunity for anybody who is a member of the USEA to be able to have a say on anything that is going on within our sport. And also, as we've said, to learn about various different things as well. So it is educational, but we hope that it will be a really, really transparent process too. Let's talk through the week, because there is a lot going on. And as I say, one of the benefits of it being virtual is you can dip in and out to the bits that interest you, the bits that you find really, that will be really useful for you. It all starts, Rob, on Tuesday. So this show will be released on Monday the 7th. And actually, I suppose it does start on Monday, but the open forum starts on Tuesday with the rules forum, which is always one that has a lot of passion behind it.
Yeah, it does. And we're always lucky to have Malcolm Hook in the kind of leader chair to give us an insight into what rules have been proposed. I think this year we're going to try to touch on some of the rules that are in the pipeline. It's been such an odd year that we don't want anyone to be to find out about a potential rule change late. So again, we're going to put it all out on the table and people will be able to weigh in with questions and answers. And like you said, it's it's always a really good discussion. Most of the time it's really cordial. So yeah, we'll see what this year has in store for us. I think because it was such an odd year, we might not have quite the volume of rule changes coming forward, but I will say that the ones that are coming forward that we'll discuss are pretty pivotal for the sport.
Are there any that you can sort of give us as an example of things that will be up for discussion in that forum?
Sure. Yeah, I know one rule change that has not been submitted to the USCF, but it's been approved by our Board of Governors, is the five rail rule. And I know Dee is super familiar with this one. In Britain, it exists already, in some other countries, I believe. And essentially what it's going to say is that in show jumping, if a horse and rider combination knock down basically more than four rails, so five or more rails, they'll have to do a compulsory retirement. And really, it's a safety. It's more than anything, it's a safety proposal, because when we took a look at the stats, Equa Ratings helped us immensely with that. We did see, you know, and it kind of stands to reason that if you're bashing through the fences on the show jumping, you probably should not be continuing on to cross country on that day. So, you know, I think it's for me personally, I think it's a very good rule change proposal, and will be one that reduces risks.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, there's no, I'm just looking at the various reports here, which have discussed this. It's one which has been discussed pretty much in every country in the world in the last couple of years. But there's no doubt that as you get into that 20 penalties in the show jumping phase, and you look, it's quite difficult actually to code, because you've got to make sure that you're primarily looking at when those falls took place. Is it before cross country? You know, that you're not including necessarily the times that we see the rails coming down after cross country. So you've got to make sure you're getting your analysis right. But we've done a lot of analysis in every country at national level, and we've also done the international level, and it is something which makes sense. You do see an increase in cross country risk once you get into that 16, 20, 24 area in terms of show jumping penalties. What you're trying to do, Rob, is it doesn't actually impact a huge amount of people. And one of the things which happens, and one of the roles, I suppose, of Equa Ratings is some changes like that will always create a lot of debate. Frangibles is another one. They always create a lot of debate because they're very, I suppose, visual, and everybody has a story about them. But the reality is they impact on a very, very, very small amount of the population. There's not that many people who are in that kind of 20 to 24 penalties in the show jumping phase. But of that small group, can we lessen risk, or can we make an impact on our overall horse fall, in particular horse fall metrics in cross country? And I would say this isn't sensible change insofar as it impacts a tiny amount of people, but of the people that we do see, with that level of falls in the show jumping phase, there is an increased risk. There is a higher fall rate, rider and horse, as opposed to the general population. So a small change, which will no doubt get conversation, but you're talking about impacting, you know, less than 1%. So
yeah,
not going to be something which is going to happen very often, but when it does, at least now there is something which allows officials to be able to make a change.
Yeah, and I'm aware of a couple others as well that are all focused specifically on safety. You know, we do have a frangible rule change proposal coming in related to how open corners are pinned, and basically getting away from the older style of frangible device and moving forward now to the newer devices. And like I said, you know, a lot of focus on safety this year, which is always important.
Yeah, and hopefully it is going to have some good discussion, but there will be some real strides forward going to make a difference for 2021. The next open forum as such would be the USCF High Performance Forum, which will be at 3:00 Eastern on Wednesday 9th. Jenny Autry, the managing director of Venting, and Eric Duvander will be basically discussing the past year and looking forward to 2021 Tokyo and the Olympic Games and obviously beyond. Derm, I'm looking forward to that one because I think that there is a lot of confidence building in the US.
Yeah, it's been, I suppose, how many times are we going to say, Nicole, it's been a strange year insofar as the Olympics didn't take place, obviously, as we know, in 2020. And one of the things we've been looking at is who are the big beneficiaries from that. And I don't think there's any doubt that the US are one of the big beneficiaries in terms of nations which will benefit from having that extra year. It is quite a young squad in terms of horses. And if we look, you know, we've talked about Liz Halliday Sharp a lot, but like the, you know, how far De Niro Z has come, I'm sure will be a talking point across the weekend and as well into next year. But there's a number of other horses on that squad who coming into 2020 had very definite targets, which I would say are in that kind of sub 32 finish mark. How many are actually able to get into the sub 32 finishing mark? And just looking at that high performance squad, there was a big jump in 2020 at the horses able to do that. So having an extra year, you know, to be able to make that progress, particularly I suppose that 8 and maybe 9 year old horses, 10 year old horses getting a little bit more experience. There's no doubt the US are one of the big beneficiaries. They're gonna have pretty formidable opponents, of course, in Germany and Britain and a couple more. I think everybody is building and everybody's reasonably confident, but I think there's rightly placed renewed confidence in the US high performance team going into 2021.
Just out of curiosity, you know, it felt like here in the US that our organizers, our competitions, when we started to loosen up on the run restrictions as of June, we were able to put together a fairly strong season of competition. I don't know, when you look internationally, does it seem like there were more opportunities in the US than there were in some of the other countries, or is it about the same? I just out of interest.
No, there was more in the US. I think you were open in terms of eventing a little bit earlier, and then because of the way your calendar falls, you were able to keep going a little bit later. So, you know, Tryon, I suppose, is later in the calendar. So when you just look at the European season in particular, it hit those middle 3 months, I suppose, from April, May, June, it was just such a major impact. Whereas for the US, I think it might have only been, say, 2 or 3 weeks on either side of what happened in Europe, but 6 weeks in terms of an eventing season is massive. So there was more opportunity to compete, and then that was taken up. You know, you'd record entries at Tryon in those big classes. So you also, you know, people traveled and got it done late in the year. I mean, there's a lot of interest and analysis about it, but in terms of just an overall impact, I think USEA in particular has come out probably better than most nations in terms of how you were able to cope from a entries and run point of view. You know, you definitely have seen a reduction in the US, as we've seen globally, but a lot of countries, a lot of the big countries saw reductions in their runs of probably up to about 50%, and in some cases internationally even higher than that. Whereas in the US, the drop-off is closer to 30%. So, I mean, look, you're more aware of it than anyone, Rob, but 30% drop in entries is a huge impact on the members. It's a huge impact on the USEA generally, but it's still not the 50% or 55% that we've seen in other nations. So comparative, like always difficult, but comparatively, the competitions have been able to keep going better than elsewhere. The entries have held better than elsewhere.
Yeah, hopefully that. Well, so we'll hear from High Performance and see how that factors
into the pressure. Let's keep piling pressure on them, Rob. We want medals in Tokyo.
Then that kind of leads into the Eco Ratings presentation, which is all about from sort of going from personal milestones to team gold medals. Tell us a bit about that. That will be on the Friday.
Yeah, I suppose there's a couple of things that we were interested in terms of what we would do for our convention presentation. So we jogged our memories, and there's times when our role has been sort of to present the numbers of the year, which is more to do with, I suppose, entries and month by month analysis. And while it's interesting for the nerds, it's probably not as interesting for people who are just, you know, want the highlights. And one of the things which we did back in 2016, Rob, was we did a review of Rio, which was really popular, and it was all about kind of how everything played out and how you can use data to tell the story of how everything played out. And it was a little bit, it was one of the first years that we presented, and it was an insight, I think, for members to be able to see that actually it's not just all about kind of nerds in a back room crunching numbers, that actually being able to tell the stories differently. So like going back to that, there was a situation where Mark Todd, who was at the time the only double Olympic champion, he was going into the ring on Leonidas. And if he had jumped clear, you know, that team, New Zealand team, would have won gold. But as each pole fell, they dropped from gold to silver to bronze to no medal. Now, that wasn't part of the commentary, but we used that presentation to be able to say, like, this is how numbers can make the sport better. There was a time in the cross country in 2016 when Ingrid and Janelle were both on course at the same time, and it was pretty much fastest one goes into the lead. And again, unless you've access to all these numbers, and unless, you know, you're, I suppose, an analyst to some degree, you're not probably able to convey that message live in commentary. So what we were using that presentation was to show that actually numbers can be fun. I know I sound a bit like a maths teacher, but numbers can be fun.
You should get a t-shirt with that on.
Yeah, I know. But what we're going to try to do this year is we wanted to do something which was around the Olympics, because it's just such a big talking point for our sport going into 2021. So we're looking at how to win a medal, what kind of numbers, what kind of performance you need to be showing. How to win a medal as a team is a very, very different proposition to how to win a medal as an individual. So you can expect as a team, it's all about cross-country jumping clear. The format change is a massive difference for the sport that hopefully we can help people to anticipate and appreciate how big a change that is as opposed to previous years. So previous years, you had four and three counting scores. This year, you'll have three counting scores from three riders. That change is absolutely massive in terms of how medals are going to be won. In terms of individual medals, it's all about the first phase. Dressage is the one place in our sport where you can get better and better and better and lower and lower and lower. And we see that over the last 10 years, dressage marks are probably 5 marks on average better than they were 10 years ago. That's because we're all training and the sport is becoming so much more professional. However, the scoring system of the sport means you can't get more marks for being better at cross country than you were 10 years ago. You can't get more marks for being better at show jumping than you were 10 years ago. So we can't really track as much how much those phases have improved, but we can see, because dressage is a, you know, continuous downward drop, that phase is improving. What that means in terms of winning a medal is that the low dressage marks are the ones that are likely to be winning medals. So what we want to do is to show, here's how you will win a medal, or here's how medals will be won at Tokyo. But to make that relevant to everybody, from owners to grassroots riders, what we want to do is show how those calculations are made, show how they affect, say, training level or modified level, so that you can actually use the same numbers that will be used by Philip Dutton and Boyd Martin and Jenny Autry and Eric Devander, and you have access to the exact same calculations, access to the exact same numbers, and to show if you want to win at training level, if you want to, you know, if you want to win basically any grassroots class, here's how you track your numbers. It's the exact same process as if you were trying to win a medal at Tokyo. Slightly different numbers, but not massively different. So again, at those more grassroots levels, we do see a similar trend to, like you would see in Olympic individual medals, which is often about first phase performance. So we're going to track how to win an Olympic medal, but also how those same numbers apply all the way across the sport.
Yeah, that would be brilliant. So that is on Friday. There are also a couple of others that you might be interested in, listeners. Daniel Stewart, who we had on the show around April time, I think, that's available to go back and listen to if you would like to, basically talking about improving your mindset, and also Tony Sandoval about helping to make you stronger and physically fitter in order to compete at the higher levels. On Saturday, Rob, we turn attention to the actual USEA annual meeting, which is a really important moment for the USEA each year. And it is something that we very much want the members to tune in for, get involved with as well.
Yeah, we really do. It's you, I don't really consider anyone a really active or I think you need to exercise your membership, you know, who you are as a member by attending that. And that's really kind of, I'm calling out a lot of our members because it's where you not only vote for the leadership of the organization, but you vote on important issues moving forward for the sport. And then even beyond the vote, you know, we're celebrating and discussing what happened over the previous year. And then also, honoring a few of our top volunteers, and then we always try to make it so it's interesting by having a couple of really you know, stellar keynote, either a single or a few keynote speakers to talk on topics that are really going to engage the members, and then allowing the members the opportunity to engage directly, even in this virtual world, you know, engage directly with some pretty spectacular prominent people in the sport. So yeah, I know it's a very important part of our year, and probably, as I say, it's actually my most important meeting of the entire year.
That is 2:00 Eastern on Saturday, December 12th. So the meeting of general members, the AGM, will take place at 2:00, but then it leads into, and you just touched upon a couple of the fan and guest speakers. Can we tell the listeners who they are going to be if they don't already know, Rob? It's not a secret Absolutely. Anymore, is it?
No, it's not. And I think the theme should be girl power this year for sure. And it's well deserved.
To be honest, it's a privilege to be even spoken about in the same sentence as the two guests. So first of all will be Liz Halliday-Sharp, who is the USEA's leading rider of the year, the first time a female winner since 1981, Rob?
Correct. You got it. Karen Stives, 1981.
There we go. So we will have Liz on with an exclusive interview talking about her achievements this year and everything that has led to this point, and hopefully what will come in the future, and the importance actually of her win in 2020. Dee, Echo Ratings have been talking about a few of Liz Halliday-Sharp's numbers over the last couple of weeks because she's had an extraordinary year despite all of the difficulties that we faced.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about it a little bit, the 9 international wins, which is more than any other rider in the world. I think this award is really well deserved, Nicole. But what I would love you guys to talk to her about is not just 2020, because I think 2020 is the kind of culmination of an awful lot. But what I'm looking at here, and I don't want to go too deep into the numbers because I know some people find it boring, but it is just such a good way of showing what a journey Liz Halliday-Sharp has been on. I'm looking at numbers from 2010 to 2020, so 11 full seasons in there. Back in 2010, Liz Halliday-Sharp had 12 international runs. She had no wins. She had no top fives. From her 12 runs, she had 2 show jumping clears. And her average finishing score, her average dressage score was 37.5. Her average finishing score was 60. And 2011 wasn't much different. No international wins. Average finishing score of 50. Average starting score of 35.3. As you go through the years, I've kind of got a nice little graph in front of me, but as you go through the years, suddenly the runs pick up. So in 2013, she was on 32 international runs, and it stayed pretty steady. She had 32 international runs again in 2020. It stayed pretty steady around that 30 mark. But this year, the wins began to pick up. It moved from 2 to 3 to 4, and then this year it was 9. Her win rate is 28%. But what's amazing, guys, she had 19 finishes in the top 5 this year from 32 international runs, a top 5 rate of nearly 60%. Her average finishing score has got lower and lower every year. Her average dressage score has got lower and lower every year. Her average dressage score is now 29.1, and her average finishing score is 35.9. But to pause for a minute, 10 or 11 seasons ago, her average finishing score was 60, and she had 10 or 12 international runs in a year. Over the last 11 seasons, she's halved it, pretty much. She's down from 60 to 35.9 in terms of her finishing score. And she's doing that across 32 international runs a season. This year, she had 9 wins. It has been a massive journey when you think of all of the different horses, some of them still with us. Some of them have kind of publicly had quite heartbreaking exits from the sport. And Liz has shared that and allowed us to come along on that journey. She goes into 2021 with De Niro Z. She goes in as a key member of that high performance squad that we're talking about. And I just think it's a special story. It's a really, like, it's cool to talk about 2020 and what she's done. But I think to talk about the decade and what has led to this point and what has led to this really, really well-deserved award, which is a culmination of so much hard work, I think it's such a cool thing for it to be recognized, and I'm really looking forward to hearing the story behind it.
Yeah, and Liz talks so beautifully. She's very, very honest. She's very real. And I think it's going to be a really, really interesting chat with her. So that will be broadcast straight after the AGM, an interview with Liz. But then, Rob, we go on to another leading lady rider to, and this is a chance actually for the members to ask their questions as well. So if listeners, you've ever thought, do you know what, I'd really like to ask Piggy March how she does a certain thing, or how she's got to where she's got to, or what challenges she's faced, or anything like that, then this is your chance, because Piggy will be one of our keynote speakers taking part, and the audience, anybody watching along at home, will have their chance to ask questions as well, won't they?
They will, yeah. And I'd say Piggy, I mean, you led into it, but Piggy is amazing. And I will say, for the last couple of years, Piggy's been at the top of our list of speakers that we wanted to bring in. So the idea that we could bring her in this year, we jumped at it, and we're so lucky to have her. I briefly met her, I think it was Kentucky last year when she came in for the 5-star, and just so pleasant. And actually it was really funny because our then president, Carol Kozlowski, was like following her around because she was so just, impressed with her and smitten with her, and all she wanted was a picture, and we got that. So, you know, again, this is your opportunity as our members to interact with one of the leading riders in the world, let alone top female rider. You know, this is pretty extraordinary. So can't wait to see what she says, because from what I understand, she's really, like you said with Liz, I mean, she really speaks from the heart. She's a really incredible interview.
She is, and she's had her challenges and her real ups and downs over her career that she talks very candidly about. I'll be honest, Rob, she is one of my absolute favorite people in the sport to interview. She's brilliant. She's really, really good. So listeners, if you have got a bit of time in your diary, next Saturday, the 12th of December, it will be the USEA AGM, but you will also be able to hear from two incredible guests in Liz Halliday-Sharp and Piggy March as well.
And also, there's one spectacular additional member of the panel, and that's our moderator, Nicole Brown. I don't know if you've heard of her, but she's quite good.
She's a star. Just tune in for that alone.
You can't say that alongside the likes of Piggy and Liz, but I mean, that's a privilege.
I'm going to be tuning in to hear all of your pronunciations. Make sure you get them all right. Albuquerque, yeah. Maryland. Are you going to say Maryland again?
No. No, not saying that word.
Nicole is in such training now.
That is where I live. I might have to update something. Hey, guess where I am right now, Nicole?
No. Don't draw me into this. I will not be making that mistake again. But listeners, we really, really hope that you will get involved. So anybody who has a 2021 USEA membership will be sent all of the links directly. If you haven't got your membership, there is still time, Rob.
That's right. Yeah, please make sure you renew your membership by December 9th so that you get that invitation email. So you only get a special invitation if you're a member.
There you go. And do you know what, listeners? This is a real chance for all of the USEA membership to have their say and also to learn a few things along the way as well and interact with some incredible guests. So we really hope that you'll take advantage of it. I'm very much looking forward to it. I know Dermot, Rob and the rest of the USEA team are as well. It's a big weekend for the sport and we're looking forward to making sure that it is a brilliant virtual edition of the USEA convention. Rob, Dee, thank you both very, very much.
Thanks, Nicole.
Yeah, thank you.
And listeners, we hope you've enjoyed a little insight into what is in store for the virtual convention in 2020. If you haven't already, as I say, get that membership sorted for 2021 so that you get all of the links sent directly to you and that we'll look forward to having you as part of the 2020 edition of the USEA virtual convention. We'll see you then. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for listening to the USEA official podcast. If you have any suggestions or feedback, then we would love to hear from you. Get in touch through any of our social media platforms at US Eventing, and don't forget to subscribe on your preferred podcast platform to make sure you don't miss an episode.